Welcome back to Be More Super, the podcast, where we explore the world of entertainment with celebrity interviews from your favorite movies and TV shows. So grab your popcorn and let's get to know these stars better and what really makes them super. We are brought to you by PropStore.com, where you can find your very own piece of entertainment memorabilia from screen-used props to costumes. Now, here's your host, Brian Garner.
So on this week's episode of Be More Super, the podcast, we're joined by an awesome actress. She's starring in the new Roswell Delirium that is out next year, but we're building the buzz for it. So from neoscience to the screen, let's find out a bit more about Ashton Solenki. Ashton, how are you, my love?
I'm doing well. You know, I'm in Los Angeles right now and it's a rainy day and I find that pretty refreshing. So I'm doing well. It's a good day.
Wow. You know what? In the UK, it always rains.
It's like that all the time here.
Get out. LA is sunshine, rainbows and butterflies from what I can see on the TV. But I wanted to talk about LA, actually, because when you started your career, I read somewhere that you moved. You upped and moved from a small town in Montana. I think you've said it had like 1,500 people in this town.
Yeah. Wow, you know, I'm really impressed.
Which I find very fascinating. I'd love to live in a small sort of farming community as you did, but I'm sure many are trying to get out and trying to expand and see the world. So
there's a beauty about living in a small town. There's often a large sense of community, which is really, really great. It's a great place to grow up in. Farming, railroading, coal mining. My grandpa was a coal miner, and I grew up with my grandparents. But there's limits to small towns as well, you know. And so especially in Montana, a tiny town in Montana, was so excluded from everything. Wonderful place to grow up, great nature. But my first job was at a movie theater. There's a one screen movie theater where I grew up. And I would do the concessions for the movie theater. And then I would sneak around and watch the movies. And I would just long to do it so hard. So yeah, fast forward a couple of years, I moved out of the small town, went to college also in Montana. And then I followed this whole tyranny of the shoulds, you know, because society says, well, you do this, then you do this, then you do this, then you do this. So I did all those things. And then all of a sudden I'm in this corporate job. I was in Seattle and it was a great experience. The people were wonderful, but I was like, was this it? This is what the pipeline, this is not for me, everybody. What do I do? And then I moved across the country, came to LA. I knew nobody. I knew nothing about acting at all. No experience.
But what was LA like though? Because, you know, we hear stories about the streets are paved with gold and we know the reality. It's not exactly like that. So what was your first impression of LA? Because wanting to make it in the business and go to, you know, the mecca of all show business. I mean, what was your first impressions of Los Angeles?
I remember being very nervous to move to LA because you hear about, at least I heard about, you know, oh, there's so many, you know, negative things about people, these types of people there. And I come from a small town in Montana where we're very friendly. And so I was very nervous. And so although I'll say there are those people here, but they're everywhere. There's also like incredible people here. So one of my first impressions of LA was driving down Hollywood Boulevard with like the walk of stars, you know? And I remember being like, it's not as clean looking as everybody says. And then there was this woman walking across the crosswalk in front of me and she pulled down her skirt and shat in the middle of the road. And I was, welcome to Los Angeles.
It can't get any better than that.
Yeah, exactly. But it's such a varied city. One of my favorite things to do here is I've got this dog, Australian Shepherd. She's my whole world. Don't even get me started. But we go hiking up to this place and it's ironically called Inspiration Point. And it overlooks, you know, the mountains and the sea and the city. And every time I'm there and I look across this sprawling city, there's something so unique about it, because I swear you can just feel like these dreams and these dreams being made and these dreams being broken and the heartbreak and the love. And it's just this city of a lot of energy, and where a lot of people like me, I think, who maybe didn't fit in, where they were growing up and dreamt of bigger things, it's this hodgepodge melting pot of all these dreamers, myself being one of them.
Well, the thing is, the history LA has got in the Hollywood industry is crazy. Do you know what I mean? Going back to Charlie Chaplin and Lucille Ball and people like that. So I'm glad that your experience is good and you're continuing that with your dog. Question is, have you seen that woman again?
I haven't, but I will admit that I've seen at least half a dozen more just like her. that is an actual experience of living here.
Things what people do for attention, eh? It's terrible. So, I mean, we've all got dreams of our future. And we've all got dreams of what we want to achieve. I mean, when you started out in this industry, did you have a plan in place in what you wanted to achieve in the way of people that you want to work with, the type of shows that you want to be on, your dream movie, you know, role?
Yeah, I always had a sense of the ideal types of projects I'd love to be involved in. I'm very drawn towards actually movies just like Roswell Delirium, where they're psychological thrillers or really challenging or make people uncomfortable to watch. And really, because you have people's attention for this short amount of time. And if you can share a very good story or allow them to be uncomfortable in a safe environment, you can really just share more of the human experience and plant ideas and just really, you know, it's just a very powerful medium. But when I came to LA, I didn't think about any of that. I thought, well, I'm quitting my job. I'm moving across the country. All I want is to get good training, is what my first goal was. And so that I landed here. Within a week, I was studying at this conservatory for 2 years, which I always say that regardless of whatever may or may not happen, that training totally changed my life, period. It was fantastic. It was essentially, the work is Meisner work, but you wind up unlearning all those societal, like, you should do this and you have to behave this. And then you just get to like really face who you are. But then as I started near graduation, I just graduated last year. All of a sudden, it was like, wow, this has been 20 to 40 hours of my week every week. Now what am I going to do? And so I've only recently started making these actual goals. But for me, at least, I've noticed that I have to stay focused on the type of work I want to do and the type of projects. Because if I get too business oriented, then I lose the heart of the matter. And then pretty soon I'm just standing still.
I mean, it's quite difficult, isn't it? Because you say that the business, but it is, I suppose, it is a business, but it's an art form as well. And obviously, you don't want to get lost in, the business side. But let's talk about Roswell Delirium, because it's an absolutely fabulous movie. It really is. It's so powerful and thought-provoking. If you could talk us through a bit about what the movie is about and whom you play.
Great. Roswell Delirium is a sci-fi psychological thriller, I would say. The world is historical. It's as if the United States was bombed in the 80s, twice, nuclear bombs. And then so the world is this fallout and the aftermath of this. And so that's the world that we play in. But essentially, the story itself is actually about a mother and a daughter, the heart of the matter, and how these two navigate this world together and how they navigate extreme circumstances between the two of them. So the little girl, whose name is Mayday, she becomes very sick with radiation poisoning, and it becomes really evident that, you know, no amount of modern medicine is going to save her. And this is a common theme throughout the movie for all these other kids. And so her mother takes her in this desperate plea to this place called Space Rock, which is formerly Area 51, I believe, and essentially gives her to who she believes is aliens. And so that's the concept of the movie. I play the little girl Mayday, grown up, and she's known as Firefly, her nickname Firefly. And I can't tell you too much about it because, ironically enough, I have a lot of spoilers in that movie, but I'll just tell you, I play her grown up, and you learn a lot. You learn a lot with her grown up, and things may not be as they seem.
It is very difficult to talk about this movie, you know, about certain things, because I think it's just a fabulously written film straight away from Richard Bakewell, who directs it as well. But yeah, it's just fascinating. It really is. And I said to Richard that the real test of watching a movie is that you don't look at your phone during watching a movie. Do you know what I mean? You don't.
It really is these days.
It is terrible. And I actually watched it and I was engrossed from the beginning to the end because it's got everything in there. It really has. But you had your premiere not long ago at Culver City Film Festival. I've got a picture here, and I've got to say, Richard is looking like a proud daddy in the end, just there with his kids. How was that experience going to the premiere?
I have to be totally honest. I was terrified. I was so nervous because Richard, fantastic as he is, he does this thing where he teases. So he would send out a 10 second snippet. And I was just so nervous, and he really built this thing up and pumped us all up. And I just had this fear of like, oh no, what if I was awful? You know, that imposter syndrome that we all have. That maybe if we didn't have, we would be psychopaths. But so I was so nervous. And then as soon as I got there and I saw everyone that I worked with and all these incredible human beings, and then all these people that came to support so genuinely, all those fears melted away. And it just became excitement. And I just felt so lucky and so honored to be there, to be part of that film, to a project that really just rips your heartstrings right out. That's my dream type of project. And to be doing that with incredible humans, incredibly talented at what they do,
Was that the first time that you saw it in full then?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yes. And what did you think at the end?
How cool.
That is amazing. I mean, what was the reception like? I mean, what did you walk away thinking?
Oh, yeah. I remember having this moment, actually, before the movie was over. And I was actually sitting next to Ari, who plays my mother in the film. And I looked next to her and I just nodded as if to say, like, you know, yeah, we did that. We did that. I felt very proud to be part of it. And of the movie itself, I was so surprised. I felt like I was on a roller coaster because, I mean, obviously you have the script, you read the script, but as an actor, you are visualizing what you need to do your job. But to see how Rick brought that to life and the visuals and the cinematography and the performances, people were laughing throughout, you know, the first half of the film is actually quite funny. Mm-hmm. Who knew? I didn't know. So I was laughing, looking around like, well, this is funny. I didn't know, is this going to be funny? And then, you know, it just lands into this rip your heart out, you know, grand discoveries and twists and turns and things like that. And I thought, wow, Rick really did this.
What a cruel way, though, of seeing your first, you know, the first run of the film is when you're surrounded by everyone. Because that's normally you have a private screening, wouldn't you?
That's what I thought. That was part of the reason I was so nervous, you know, because I was like, you know, obviously you do your work and you hope it is perceived as the way it feels, but that's the art of it, you know. And my thought was, man, if this is going to suck, that's one thing. But if this is going to suck and I have to sit in front of all these strangers, that's going to be extra awful. But the reception was fantastic. And it was really interesting to, you know, some people seem to just totally get it right away. And they were so into it, so excited. And other people, I would walk past these groups of people as we exited the theater. And these people would be talking, well, what about this? Or maybe it was this. And it was so cool to see how he captured these minds and gave them all these things to think about, and how some people said that, you know, this is definitely a film where when I watch it again, I'm going to pick out all these small things that only make sense now that I've seen the ending. And it was just very cool, very wild to hear the chatter and the excitement afterwards. It was.
I always say that if you enjoy a movie, watch it at least three times, because you're right, you pick out different things because you're so engrossed with the story, sometimes you can miss a few things. And obviously there's over like 100 Easter eggs in this movie dedicated to the 80s. So I need to rewatch it again and make notes for myself. But let's talk auditions and what attracted you to the role of Firefly. Richard told me about the auditions. What was your experience like? Did it go well in your mind? He mentioned something about slipping you a note before the audition. Apparently you came in for a second audition and he slipped you a note. It was between you and one other person. And then he slipped you a note and then you literally smashed it out of the park. But you know what? What I thought was really cruel.
Yeah.
So everyone around him said, right, you need to tell her now. She's got the part. You need to tell her. And he went, no, I'm going to leave her for 2 days.
Is very Rick. That's what I mean. Now you understand what I mean when I say he was teasing, he was torturing us before the premiere. That's exactly it. He's like, oh, I'll let her simmer for 2 days. Yeah. But I remember, so actually with that audition, I had seen a breakdown for it on Actors Access, which is where, you know, a lot of auditions come from and through is Actors Access. And I saw the project posted. And I loved the synopsis of it. I thought that is exactly my type of film. And then I saw the role description and I had this feeling where I was like, I want this. So I submitted for it, asking if I could audition. They sent back and said, okay, send in an audition request. And it was going to be a self-tape. And first off, self-tapes are hard, but that is just the nature of this industry right now. But I went to do the self-tape here. I had like a 24-hour turnaround. So I went to do it here. And there was so much construction everywhere. It was so loud. I thought, I can't do this here. And I started panicking because I don't have that much time. So then I say, okay, well, I'll go to my old acting studio and rent it out for an hour and just get it done. I go over there. There's construction over there. It's so loud. And so then I go to a third friend's house. I was like, unbelievable. So I actually did not submit it. And I remember feeling like, I should have made it work. I should have just submitted it with all the noise, da, da, da. I really beat myself up about it because I wanted that opportunity. But then 2 months later, you know, time just passed, no communication or anything. You know, my manager reaches out to me and he says, hey, this project with the director, Rick Bakewell, reached out and want to bring you in for their callbacks as a wild card. Would you be interested? And I was like, are you kidding me? He's like, I have no idea what this is. I'm like, I do. Yes, please. And so I went to audition and I went in twice. They'd been auditioning several people before that and for like a couple other sessions. And I showed up and I sat in the lobby and I got there early because it's the scene was extremely emotional. So I wanted to be hot right before I came in, you know, just ready to go. And so I wanted to prepare a little bit in the lobby. And as soon as I sit down, they come out. They're like, Ashton, are you ready? Would you like to come in right now? And I thought, great. Okay. Lovely. Okay. So I go in and then he asked me if I had any questions and I said, no, I said, just give me, you know, a couple of seconds. And I turned around in my chair, finished preparing quickly, turned back around and then did the thing. And I remember there were maybe six people in the room and they all started crying. And I remember thinking like, well, even if I don't book this, that felt good. And I liked that reaction. And so I left and then I got another call back and I came in that time. And then he told me, the note he gave me was hold back the emotion. Don't lose it, but hold on to the note of, this is hard for you to say to her. Mm. And that was really painful to do. It was hard to do in the sense of, you know, you're feeling all these things, and to feel them and let them live in you, but not send them out. Changed the whole scene, and that was apparently exactly what he was looking for. And I remember when I left the first audition, he said, "Do you have any questions or anything you want to say?" And they said, "Nope, thank you." And then I just left. And then the second time, I thought, you know, I should say something rather than just coming in, working, and then leaving. And so as I was leaving, I said, you know, "Thank you so much for this opportunity." And I realized that I actually really connect to Firefly, the heart of the matter, with the mother. And I relate a lot to that feeling with my mother, I think, in a different way, but that heartstring of, you know, you love your mother. And if there's things that you could say to her, especially if things had happened, you know, this one moment. And then I left. And then I got a call from Kylie, who plays Mayday, or like the younger me. And I was so awkward on the phone because she was like, "Hey, it's me. You got it." And I was like,
"What? Was that the first thing that you heard? So it wasn't from Richard? No? Wow."
No. So you're like, from her.
Is this real? Are you having me on? Did you have to check the information?
Well, yeah, it took me a moment because I hadn't really talked a lot with Kylie. She led me into the audition room, you know, and I knew who she was. But so when I answered it and I heard this little girl voice, and I was like, "What? Who is this?" And then she said, "I'm Kylie." And I had to be like, "Da-da-da-da-da," because it'd been a while, you know, and was like, "Oh, Kylie, oh, girl." And then she was like, you got the role. And I was like, "Thank you." And then he was a little silent. It was like, "Now what? What am I supposed to say?"
I mean, when you get the role and you sign on the dotted line, do you know like the full story at that point, or are you yet to find that out? Because I've got a picture of you at the table read just here. So this is the table read. Is this the first time that you actually read through the story? Because it I always wonder that what happens if you sign up for something and the audition and the sides are amazing, and then you get to the actual project and you think, "Oh dear, what have I signed up for? Get me out of it quick." I mean,
that has happened to me. It varies, but in my experience, a lot of the time, I don't get to read the shooting script or the script until after I've booked the role. You have a synopsis of what the movie is going to be about, and you have a breakdown of who is who. And so I had gotten that script, I think, a couple days before the table read. And, you know, I read through it myself. And then it was so wild at the table read because it's just like watching it, except for you get to see the people, you know, all the actors and actresses perform it and read it, and it comes to life off the page in such a different way. And I was so excited. But there definitely has been times where I've booked a role and I'm like, "Oh, everything sounds great." And then I read it and I'm like, no. There's been once or twice that happened, but it's rare.
So there isn't a cancellation period on you signing on the dotted line?
Ideally, you get the script the same time that you sign online, you know, that way you're signing your name, you know, after you've read it, and then you are actually signing your name. there's yet to be a time where they're like, "Sign now, you can't read anything, just do it, sign your life away."
but you know what, there's some actors that get that, don't they, when they get, I don't know, sign a three-picture deal or whatever, they don't know what, you know, the material was going to be like, which can be quite damaging to someone's career. So with this film, it stars some veterans, some legends in Anthony Michael Hall, Dee Wallace, Reginald Vell Johnson, and Sam Jones. I mean, when did you find out that they were signed on to the project as well? And did you actually know who they were? Because they were massive in the 80s, and you're quite young. So I don't know if they were in, I don't know, in your radar as who they were?
So I did not find out who was attached to this project until that table read. And so we go around and Rick is introducing everybody before we read. And then it gets to these last people with Dee Wallace and Reginald Johnson and Anthony Michael Hall. And everyone in the room was clapping and cheering. And I'm awful. And I thought, maybe they're good friends. I don't know. It's so awful.
At least you're honest. Just,
literally, when I met Anthony Michael Hall, I did not know who he was. I don't know who most people, I'm very bad with names. And so an awful industry to be bad at names in, I'm aware. But when I met him, I went on set to visit because I wanted to see Kylie perform and, you know, see if she had any physicalities that I wanted to embody to make sure it was pretty seamless. But he was there. And he said to, I didn't know who he was. And he said to me, good luck. Can't wait to work with you. Don't worry. You're going to do great. And I said, yeah, you too. I had no idea. And as soon then Rick was like, you know who that is, don't you? I said, oh yeah, that's Mike. He goes, no, that's Anthony Michael Hall, you know, Breakfast Club, I said, I'm like, are you kidding me? And I wanted to put my foot in my mouth. It was so embarrassing. But it was such a great honor to work across him and watch him totally take command of his work. And then to work off of each other, it was awesome. It was awesome.
I mean, did he give you any advice after that moment that you shared?
I think he just thought it was cute in a way, like, okay.
Thing is, they were massive back in the day, and they still are now. They're very, very well known, but there's so many actors out there, you know, yeah. And I think that some... their ego can get a bit sort of bruised, but I should imagine with Anthony Michael Hall, he seems very nice, so I'm sure he's fine.
You know, I've learned that you can really tell who a top-notch A-list actor is because they are absolutely humble and kind, and they are not judgmental. They're easy to work with. They root for you. They don't put themselves above you, you know, and that is how Anthony Michael Hall is. So that's why I was like, oh yeah, good luck to you too. Don't worry, you're gonna do great. He was, you know, very humble about it. He wasn't like, do you know who I am? So, and then when we worked together, he just was very encouraging, and he would say things to me. For this project in particular, it was very emotionally demanding, and I liked to stay in character in between takes. I actually yelled at Rick once because he called me Ashton and I said Firefly, and he was like, oh, okay, because my name would just pull me into Ashton, you know, and Firefly was very, very different. And so Anthony Michael Hall, in between takes or randomly, like between days of filming, he would say things to me in character because he picked up that was very helpful for me. He's just a true professional. He's fantastic.
I mean, we see you in such stellar, you know, moments in this film that literally would give any veteran a ride for their money. I really, really honestly mean that. And so you saying good luck to Michael Anthony Hall, rightly so, because literally, you know, at the point of your career, it's just astonishing to see. So what were those scenes like to perform? Because getting a role like this must have been so, it'd be like winning the lottery, because any actor would like a role that's got a lot of meat and bones and a lot of opportunities to stretch those abilities. So what were they like to perform? Because I've got to say, the moments that you're on screen, and it's not necessarily what you say, it's but how your facial expressions are. I think that a true crafts, you know, performer, it's all to do with the look and how you are on screen without even saying a thing. So what were they like to perform?
Oh, thank you. Well, so I remember I was so excited to audition for this project and everything. And then I got the call that I got it. And my first you know, 30-second response was total joy. And then my immediate response following that was like, oh no. Because suddenly I love auditioning. It's like total freedom. You get to express yourself. You hope that it's aligned with what they're looking for, but ultimately you're playing. And then all of a sudden, when you book that, especially a role like Firefly in Roswell Delirium, where, you know, it's less play. I mean, you still have to, but you have to deliver. Now you have to do it. And I remember being like, oy, what am I going to do? I can't do this. I can't do this. I was so scared. And so then I thought, the fact that I feel scared, A, means that I care, and B, means that that's my ego talking, saying you want to do well. And whenever that's in the room with you, you're not going to do well. So I need to put that aside. And I just poured into just preparing, just, you know, how do I make this actually very real to me? How do I create these new memories? And how do I do that? And then when it came time to film, I remember the morning of waking up, and I was so nervous. And I texted my acting professor from Meisner, and I said, Ranjiv Pereira, he's fantastic. But I said, what do I do? And he said, just trust yourself and the work that you know how to. And so filming it, I just had to let go of that ego. I had to let go and just be present. And the therapy scenes were relatively easygoing. Then when it came to time to film that last scene, which is a hard-hitting one, I actually had lost my grandfather and remember my grandparents raised me, and I lost my grandfather a couple months prior, and grief takes its toll on people. And the way that it took its toll on me was making me entirely numb, which is awful as an actor. So I remember being like, great, what do I do? You know? And I reached out to Ranjiv again and I said, hey, this is what's happening to me. And yet I have to film the biggest scene of the movie. And I've had this huge life change. What do I do? And he said again, you know, put that aside. You've done the preparation. You know who Firefly is. You know what it's like to feel her. Just let go, trust yourself, and know the work that you know how to do. Just do it. And I remember before I sat down, they brought me into this bunker where we were filming. And I turned around and I closed my eyes. I put my hand on my chest. And I said to myself, I often talk to myself as like there's a littler version of me inside. And she's the one that's like, gets scared sometimes. And, you know, she's almost like the emotions of me. And I told her, I said, I need you to come out. And she said, no. And I said, I know you're really scared because this scene is painful emotionally. Mm-hmm. But I need you to come out. And she said, are you sure it's really raw in here? And I said, yes. And then I just let go and I just lived in those moments to the point where I don't even fully recollect themselves. It's like I was watching myself and I remember my fingers were tingling and numb. I had to play with this necklace and I couldn't feel the necklace. I remember looking at that and I thought, well, just stay present. And afterwards, when we wrapped, it was this cathartic, exhausting feeling. I slept for like 13 hours that night. But it was physically and emotionally demanding, but so rewarding in the process of doing it itself. And so that's part of the reason I was so nervous to see it, is because I poured my heart into all these moments. And I thought, I just hope that it appears even close to how it felt. And so it was awesome to see that that is actually the magic of the camera, is that the camera magnifies and captures truth. And that truth is there. Like if you're actually feeling something, you don't have to put on a face. It's there. But also it's true, if you are feigning something, the camera picks that up as well. And so the goal is just to be truthful and just feel and just trust that it will pick up what it needs to. And people are smart, and they will understand.
I mean, that is Richard's favorite scene as well, the end scene, and he did say that it was shot a few times, but on cue, you just performed and delivered. And I was going to ask, but you've sort of answered it, is how you process after the fact to unwind. Mm-hmm. And to, because for actors, it's quite hard because they put themselves in this position where they've got to feel all these emotions and they've got to play these characters and live these characters. No wonder there's actors out there that have got issues because these character actors because of what they go through for their craft. So we've got to appreciate that. And the other thing that I wanted to say was, I get so annoyed with this is in a good way, with a film like Roswell Delirium, because there is so much content out there. It's very hard for amazing, you know, pieces of creativity like this film to get out there and to be seen. Yeah. And your talent to be seen as well, because there are actors and performers out there that are getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars, but yet what are they? They're a product. And I'm not saying that some can't act, some are some can't. Yeah. But it's just frustrating. And then me and Richard both agreed that we reckon in 10, 15 years, you'll be on stage winning number whatever award. And I wanted to say, what would go into your acceptance speech?
I would immediately thank my grandparents and my family. Because I remember when I left that corporate job, everyone was so shocked. And my family, even though I'd never really vocally spoken out loud that I wanted to be an actor, they knew. And they were like, it's about time, go for it. So they've always been extremely supportive. So I would definitely thank them. I would thank Ranjiv Pereira from the Sanford Meisner Center, because that work changed my life. Those things would definitely go in there. And honestly, if my dog, she better be alive. She has to be immortal. We talk about it all the time. I say, Sophie, you have to be immortal. You have to live forever. So I'm going to thank her as well. But I think every actor dreams of those moments and hopes that they come. But I remember, actually, similar to what you were saying, you know, there's so much content out there. And while that's beautiful in a way, because people that yearn to do something, the barrier to entry is lower, so there's more out there. As a consumer, there's a lot more to sift through. And as you mentioned, a lot of it is not great. And I was just pining about this last line as I was click, 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 click. And I remember talking to Ranjiv and saying, being frustrated. I just watched this big show on Netflix and I thought that it was awful. And I was so discouraged because I thought, at the time, I said, well, if they can do it, then why isn't this happening? Why can't I? Da, 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 da.
Which show was it?
I will not say.
Oh, come on. Is it? I'm trying to think what's on Netflix at the moment.
A couple years ago. Okay. But he had told me, it was like one of those shows where it's like very high school-y. Not very deep. I mean, it sells. It's a product that sells. But Ranjiv said, just do good work and work will come. And I hold on to that very truly. And then also I've realized too that there are lots of different types of actors. And I myself, I don't want to be every type of actor. I am really drawn to darker material, to sci-fi, to thriller, to horror, emotionally challenging things. But that also doesn't mean that there's not a place for other things, you know? I mean, people love Hallmark, but Hallmark would never create Roswell Delirium.
You never know. You never know.
You never know. It's a real dark world out there.
Everyone loves a Hallmark movie. My guest I've got on tomorrow night live, I don't know if you've ever watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but he's the guy that plays Josh. He's the Filipino guy. And he's actually in an Hallmark movie called Christmas on Candy Lane. I'm looking forward to getting him on. So what's next for you then? Because obviously this movie isn't going to come out, Richard was saying, until probably quarter two next year, so April, May time. So they're going to be doing festivals. And are you going to be attending festivals for when they, you know, attend and come out?
I would attend occasional ones here and there, but flights are expensive, so you know, you gotta pick and choose. but I would love to go to a handful of festivals. I did book my first show this year, my first network show, and we wrapped earlier in October. And I think they're about to announce it in the next couple of weeks, and it's supposed to come out in Q1. Of 2024. So I've just basically finished all these projects. And as you know, this year there was a giant strike and you know, all of that is as wrapped up. But now it's the holiday season. And so a lot of being an actor, and you hear this from everyone, regardless at what level they're at, there are periods where you are busy and rocking and rolling and you're going. And then there's periods where you're chilling, you're reflecting, you're growing your craft, etc. And I think because of the strike, a lot of us are, you know, we've wrapped projects. I was fortunate enough to be working on something that was exempt. So very lucky and thankful for that. But now it's chill for the holidays. Back to ground one, you know, back to square one, back to auditioning in the new year, having this show come out soon and having Roswell be coming out. It's so weird to think that all these people, I never thought about that as an actor. Some people think about these things. It never really crossed my mind. The fact that millions of people will watch these things. And that's something that blows my mind and is exciting, but also terrifying. And I don't know how I want to poke it, if at all. I might just be like, no. You know, Johnny Depp, I've heard, doesn't watch his movies. I can relate.
Well, I've got to say, if you think it's terrifying, maybe it's the wrong job, but keep doing what you're doing, because it's fantastic. With the holidays, have you got any traditions, any plans? Because Christmas is just around the corner, and I'm Christmaned out. I'm literally near enough sick of Christmas already. My girls are so excited. I've got to keep my voice down, actually, because they probably can hear me from here. They're only 6 and 10. So they're like literally, the elves are all over the place and they're so excited. Any plans for you for the holidays? Have you got any traditions that you normally do?
I absolutely love this time of the year. There's so many different holidays that are happening, and everybody in general is in such a festive mood, and I love that. My family, we eat together a lot. We're a foodie family. We like to gather, and we like to make fun of each other. And that is what we do during this time of the year. And usually the kids, we used to do this. I'm still a kid. I'm just a giant kid. Actually, I'm short, so I still fit in. But we do a hike in the snow a lot of the time at this time of the year. And we just are a pretty low-key family. We just like hanging out and making fun of each other.
You get snow. You get snow. I can't believe it. We get snow for one day. That's it. And then it rushes away with the rain.
Montana gets a lot of snow. And I mean, there's some years where it's not, but a couple years ago, the snow was so deep that it went from the ground to the bottom of the roofs of the buildings. And you would shovel the snow. It was almost like you were going through tunnels. Oh, there was so much.
That is awesome.
But I get to choose to go to the snow. So I love to go to the snow, but I also love to not live in it all the time.
And the question is, have you put reindeer antlers on your dog yet?
I have not, but she does sleep. I always say that she sleeps like a reindeer, actually. She lays down, and the way her paws are, she looks like a reindeer.
Well, you know what?
Holiday dress, actually. She needs a new one because she got a little thick. We've been given lots of treats, but the vet is a little upset with me, and I think that she's perfect. So
you're very lucky to have a dog. I've got four cats, and I'm a dog person. My cats are all right.
All the time.
What's that? Sorry.
Do the cats challenge your ego all the time? They just make eye contact at you.
Yeah, yeah. And they give you a false sense of security and they go on their back so you can stroke their belly and then the next second they're making holes in your hand, which at least dogs sort of like give you a warning. Do you know what I mean? But no, you know what? I can't wait to see what you do in the future. You've got some great projects on a supernatural project in the future as well. I don't know if we can mention that because it's in pre-production from what IMDb Pro says, but you're very, very busy, so I cannot wait to invite you on for the next time that you've got something out, and I'll be cheering you on once Roswell Delirium comes out on general release. I said to Richard, I'll keep on blowing that trumpet to get this out as much as I can. And then I'm sure I'll get, oh, I forgot to put a picture up of you and Kylie, because it's just the relationship. It must be fantastic offset as well. And what a performer for her age. She was only 9 when she filmed, and she's like an old soul, apparently, according to Richard.
And that day in particular was one of the days where her and I were filming at the same time, doing this flashback / present / leading people to be like, oh, you're starting to realize the truth in these moments with her and I. And that day, she grew as an actress in her craft. We all watched her level up that day, and she did work that she had never done before. It was really fantastic to see. And it was, you remember how I was talking about, I often will talk to like the younger version of myself in me while filming this. In these moments, I would look at her and see myself younger in her. And so it was cool. I felt like an older sibling / she's like a mini me, but separately as an actress, she is such a powerhouse and she's so young. It's incredible. I cannot wait to see where she goes. And I feel that way about several of the kids that are in the film. They blow me away. Some of their performances, I'm like, wait, can I have your autograph?
I know, because 9 years old, I mean, I have trouble getting shoes on my 10-year-old's feet. Do you know what I mean? For school. But yet this young 9-year-old is coming out and giving these performances. It's just amazing. It really is. But Ashton, thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's been an absolute honour. Great movie. April, May time. Roswell Delirium. Catch it if you can. Follow by the magic of post-editing. I'm going to have on the screen now the Instagram account for Roswell Delirium and your Instagram account as well, for people to follow you and like all the work that you do in the future. But thank you so much. Keep safe and stay super.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Be More Super, the podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by PropStore.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. To stay up to date with Be More Super and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at Be More Super the Podcast and on Twitter at Be More Super. Keep safe and stay super.